Welcome to the Automate and Grow podcast, brought to you by Cloud Advisory.
All right, we are here with Derek Lundsten from Scrimmage, the CEO of Scrimmage, and this is another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. And Derek traveled to California for this interview.
That's right. Exclusively for this interview. Yes.
Okay, that's obviously not true. But really, thank you. I discovered Derek through an interview that you did around lead pipeline.
Yeah.
And I forget the name. Actually, it's bad, but I forget the name of who you did the show with.
Donna Valente, probably.
Yeah. Great. That's it. So I thought, you know what? This is a guy I got to talk to, and I'm glad you came out. So yeah. I'm really glad we got to spend some time and talk before.
Absolutely. Appreciate you having me.
No problem. So maybe we can start with what is Scrimmage and what do you guys do?
So Scrimmage is a platform for delivering educational and training content, making it personalized, engaging, and fun, and delivering it to people's mobile devices, their phones and tablets.
Oh, okay.
That's really what we do. It's any type of educational and training content, and then we can essentially make it more relevant. So.
And you guys have been around for about 8 years, you were saying before?
Yeah, so we launched essentially when the iPad first came to market.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so we recognized at that point that was a totally game-changing device in terms of the future of computing and how people would eventually consume content, right? And so at the time, the idea that mobility would become the future was still a fairly leading-edge idea. Now it's obviously accepted as the norm. We're on our phones all the time and consuming all types of content. But at the time, that was still, companies used desktops, laptops, smartphones were still pretty early on, right?
Right.
And so the tablet was kind of the movement because it made mobility more sexy, right? It was that transition point between computing, traditional computing, and phones.
So what I find really interesting, the more we talk, we have so many similarities.
Sure.
Because when I started out on my own, the first project that I had was actually iPad front end, Salesforce back end.
There you go.
Yeah. And we won at the Salesforce developer competition. Mm-hmm. That's really what started me on this whole
journey of
my current entrepreneurial phase. So it's funny you say that the iPad was kind of the beginning of Scrimmage.
Very much so. And same thing to that point. So our first client base was in the healthcare segment, pharmaceutical, biotech, med device, because they, at the time they really wanted to find a way to engage with physicians, right? They were looking at a way to extend that 90 seconds to 2 minutes, right? And so the iPad was this shiny new toy.
I love it.
You had CEOs of pharmaceutical companies literally go out and buy thousands of iPads for their sales teams.
Right.
And so they had these cool devices, and then they're like, but we need things on these devices to use them.
That is so
great. And so that was the opportunity that we saw, and we said, there's a way to deliver content, right? And so the first use case became CRM, right? Salesforce was kind of moving that direction. They were early in that area.
Very early,
And then the same thing was, okay, well, if you're gonna have CRM and you're gonna have marketing content, then you should also have training content, right?
I find the So the second project we did was an EMR on iPad.
There you go.
We should have met so much
sooner. I agree. We're meeting now. And now it's mainstream. All these things, all these concepts are mainstream now. Because at the time, they were still bleeding edge, right?
Right.
But now that's the norm. And it was just kind of cool because it's been fun and also frustrating at times to watch. Because you see something, right, that you think the market's going to adopt.
It's not ready.
But it's just not ready. Yeah. And now it's finally here. And so it's kind of fun to just have observed that journey and recognize that we're in the window of people recognizing and almost taking it for granted in a way. But that's cool.
Yeah.
You've built the experience to support it, right? So
it's nice to see how far things have come.
Exactly.
And if you've been able to get early enough that it wasn't bleeding edge, or it was probably borderline bleeding
edge. Borderline.
And now you got a legit business, right?
Exactly.
And you guys have raised some money and you've kind of gone down the road of getting customers. And I mean, that's probably a good question, which is who is your customer?
Yeah, so that's been evolving a lot as well. So to keep that in mind, for the most part, we actually bootstrapped the business. We bootstrapped, and obviously there were some infusions of capital and things along the way, but it was predominantly bootstrapped. And so because of that reason, client acquisition was incredibly important for us, right? And so again, we started in healthcare, mostly because, again, there was an unmet need, and we had relationships there, and there was desire to invest, right? And so we started working with some of the largest pharmaceutical, med device, biotech companies out there, and increasingly would get success. And then the hypothesis was that banks, insurance companies, and so forth would follow quickly thereafter, but it took a lot longer than we thought. But so basically, now that we've been doing this for 8 years, our clients are not just healthcare, but banks and insurance companies and
telecom. Oh, so you eventually built that sales.
It took some time, but yeah, we did start to diversify. And then we've also started recently offering, back to your model, finding a more transactional model, what we can offer to entrepreneur-led businesses or small and mid-sized businesses that offers kind of a lighter version of the software, but in a way that we can gain volume in a way that's less friction-oriented, right? So,
so what, I guess, you know, if we go back,
yeah,
was this your first company?
No, I was involved in a few others that I co-founded or, you know, was involved early on in different things. But yeah, this was the most successful of the ventures that I've been involved.
So you've probably, like,
to this point,
you've been through the ups and downs.
Absolutely. Oh yeah, we've clawed our way and scrapped our way and gone through some serious challenges. I mean, again, when you're bootstrapping a company, you know, all of it, and you know, you've got partners and employees and customers and financials.
Grown-up problems.
Exactly. And all these things are, they don't teach you about this in school, right?
Oh, so, no, absolutely not. Yeah. Not even close.
Exactly.
Right? So, I mean, that being said, like, what brought you to even go down the entrepreneurial journey route?
Well, so I always had that desire, even when I was in my teens, like, I always felt this interest to have my own business. And even, I watched successful entrepreneurs, like Richard Branson and others, that were inspiring to me at that time. And I was telling this story, again, to Colin Morgan a few years ago. I was like, I was always looking for my big idea. I always had this concept in my mind that the entrepreneur had to have this, like, it was like an inventor, right? Like, you had to go up with this $1 million concept and it would just magically turn into the thing. And what I did not fully appreciate, but happened over time, is that I worked for different companies and I worked for entrepreneur-led businesses. I'd start to see patterns and themes. And then when I figured out what I was good at, which was sales and marketing and connecting the dots, I ended up starting to see opportunities that were just sales opportunities, but then ultimately turned into
businesses.
Right. And the more that I started following that thread, then the more opportunities started to appear to me. Right. And so, and I learned that it was not necessarily about the $1 million idea. It was more about incremental progress down the path.
So that's a big problem for me, even, like, where you have a lot of good ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And then at what point, you know, how did you know that this was the one that you were going to ride?
Well, it just, for me, it was a gut instinct thing, right? So that goes back to part of the connecting and the deal making, so to speak, because I just felt like it had all the variables of the right timing. There was a large market need. It was totally something that was new and different. It was something that there was some investment in, and even some legacy industry in the space, right, around education.
LMS stuff.
Exactly, yeah. So, like, and there were...
Which is a learning management system.
Yeah, learning management system. It's funny you say that, because that was our initial thinking. Like, once we first launched, then we actually decided we're going to go after the LMS market hard, because we've been hearing for years, all of our customers, that when we've been selling them advertising solutions and sales training solutions and different companies that I'm involved in, they always complained about their LMS.
Tough, yeah.
And so we said, oh, we've solved the problem for you guys. We built this amazing mobile experience. It's user-oriented. It's all the stuff that you've been telling us that you don't like. We've solved that for you. Open up the checkbooks. And they basically were like, you guys are a bunch of kids, and we don't, you know.
And they're like,
yeah, pretty much. And so, but we're like, but you've been telling us, like, yeah, but we have to get marketing to approve, and we have to get so-and-so to approve.
Right, because,
like,
now you're into complex deal cycles, and we're like, was that really just the size of the customer and the complexity?
I think that was part
industry?
Of it. I think that was part of it. But it was a blessing in the sense that it forced us to continue to adapt to go after enterprise. Right? A lot of what you find with venture-backed startups is they go after small and mid-sized businesses
first,
to prove product market fit.
Yeah.
We found we had to get big contracts, so we said, we're gonna go after this space. And we found one or two or three early adopter customers that said, okay, we'll take, marketing in particular, said, we'll take the chance because we like what we're hearing and we do believe philosophically in where this is going. And so we essentially co-created with these partners.
Oh, wow. That's,
you know,
great.
In a way that there was some, you know, shared risk reward, so to speak, right? And then that allowed us to then prove out the hypothesis, and then over time it was interesting. So fast forward 5 years, right? Then the hypothesis was, oh, we don't need this crappy LMS anymore.
Right.
We can just use this amazing mobile platform that's adaptive and user oriented and does all these different things that we've been saying. We're like, yeah, you've come around to what we were showing.
They're singing
all
the
along.
Praises, and
yeah.
they're buying into the message at that point
because they experienced it themselves, right? They applied it, they implemented it. They saw the results that we had anticipated, and then they, of their own volition, were like, this is a better solution, right? And so, again, this goes back to giving them what they want before they necessarily know they want it, right? That was a huge lesson in that journey.
See, it's interesting, like, for you to talk about that journey, right? Because I think There's the challenge. You hit it on the head. If you're looking at VC-backed startups, a lot of times they don't care about the revenue necessarily initially. Yeah. They're willing to fund you to just show that people will use something. Mm-hmm. And that's where that whole freemium trend hit.
Started.
And a lot of VCs don't want to invest in the enterprise sales cycle. Mm-hmm. So they're like, I don't want to ramp up with salespeople. Right. I want people to be able to put something on a credit card and go. And the flip side is the guys that are willing to wade into the enterprise sales model, which is multiple decision makers,
longer sales cycle,
time, right? Risk because you don't know how to get to the end check is a little slower, right?
Sure.
But then, you're putting your own time and money on the line to figure that out.
Yeah.
So it's kind of ironic, right? It's like we're bleeding on the stake of an enterprise sale.
Yeah.
What was that like? Like at points, did you go, what the hell am I thinking? Like, should I drop the price? Should I do it for free?
Absolutely. So it's interesting. So we never did it for free.
Okay.
So that was because we did debate it. Like we did have at some points where like, and we stuck to our guns and said, we have value. These companies will spend, and there were a couple clients that we literally, they tried to get us to give it for free, and we said, we won't do it.
Oh, wow.
And they respected that, actually.
They did. Did it cost you time more than anything? Mm-hmm. Or?
Yeah. It cost us time. Yeah, absolutely. It cost us time. Because that was the other thing. We had not grown at the pace at the percentage increase that venture-backed companies have grown.
Right.
But we've grown sustainably and healthily and consistently and had maintained great retention of our clients over the entire trajectory of our company because they've seen us grow and they've seen us stay consistent in our values and delivering both the great product and great customer service. And they've watched that kind of be built into the DNA of the company. So as we've grown, it's just a better version of that small company. Right?
So what's interesting is the early days of that.
Yeah.
Did you ever just question, why am I going into this sales cycle and is it going to come out the other side?
Well, so maybe. So let me qualify that. So I had always been in enterprise sales.
Okay.
Right? So I had some appreciation.
You got it.
I understood that piece of it. So I knew before it was my own business, I knew what the dynamics of selling an enterprise deal were. I understand kind of how people bought. I understand the consequences and the things that went into that. So aside from the fact that there was financial risk and other implications at play, I understood the overall process, right?
So you knew this is going to be a 6 to 12 month thing.
Yeah.
At the end of it, there's an upside.
There's
revenue 100%. And it's going to get adopted and there's going to be sticky.
Yeah.
Ness of the product and the platform.
But at the same time, there are still the challenge. You have to deliver. You got to keep invest. You have to make the investments well in advance of when you're going to see that return, which frankly is a hard pill to swallow
for
some entrepreneurs. And I had partners that we had a lot of discussion about that. And that was the bigger part, was gutting it through, because it was, we were actively debate, like, when is this going to turn? When is this going to get the return that we need? And we have to balance hiring and client happiness versus business stability and survival at times, right? And like, it's a very imperfect equation.
It's definitely, you hit it on the head. Like, nobody in school is going to teach you this, right? Like, in school, everything's ABC.
Right.
It's pass fail.
Right.
Right. But that's not what you're dealing with.
Well, I'm kind of glad you raised that, because that's actually a big motivator behind the company, right? I mean, scrimmage, the idea of scrimmage and the idea is it's a practice game, right? Like, you think back to scrimmaging, it's the people joke, it's the fun part of practice.
Oh, that's the name.
It's the simulated part of education, right? That's part of it. And part of it goes back to mobility from our standpoint, and the overall vision of the company is that education is going to change tremendously
Hopefully.
Using technology, right?
Yeah.
We're already starting to.
We're seeing that now. Load.
Yeah, and so this is part of that process, right?
Interesting.
And so providing game-based learning, using video-based learning, micro learning, personalization of content, right? These are all things that we've been talking about for the entire trajectory of the company that are not just corporate themes and trends, but like it's a broader educational conversation that's now happening that we've always been on the line.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't connect the dots on that. That's really interesting. So the idea is that, is there a philosophy, when you say scrimmage, is there a philosophy behind this different of how you educate people on the platform? That's the idea.
Yeah, the idea is that you're creating modalities or a variety of modalities that allow the user or the learner to engage in a way that they will actually actively engage with the technology, which is where it's different than an LMS, right? It's actually inspiring and activating a learner versus managing learning, which right. to me is...
Go through these modules is the concept of LMS. Correct. How does Scrimmage different?
So we offer all different stuff. There's game-based learning, there's video-based learning, there is still modules that they can offer, but different formats. They can read different things, there's interactive courses. There are social pieces so they can interact with their peers, right? So all these different, and there will be more that we're going to be building in, especially now with VR and AR and machine learning and the different things that are happening.
Yeah,
like
for
you can imagine, we've built the data in such a way that we can get more, even more personalized and granular with that. So
you're on the back end, are you modeling the behavior of each individual student?
We're capturing that information in terms of how they're gesturing in the application, like what they're using, how frequently, you know, what impact is it having? And the idea being that, so the vision is we're educating companies, we're educating people within organizations, but ultimately, my perspective is those are also parents, right?
Kids, absolutely.
They're thinking about, okay, my kids now have cell phones at 7 years old, and I hear all stories all the time of clients that kids are on their phones learning, you know, think about Khan Academy, think about all these other schools.
Of course. Like, how else are they going to learn? 100%. Like, you stick a kid in front of an iPad when he's 2 or 1.
Right.
And then you expect them to go to school and learn like it's 200 years ago.
Right.
For a factory job that doesn't exist.
100%. Right. So that's the exact situation, Mike, that we're talking about. Right? Like,
I love it. That's like, so that's really interesting because for a bunch of reasons. So you've got this adaptive technology that you can see a vision for that maybe this impacts more than just corporate learning.
This is an education worldwide type of thing, right? This is what gets me excited about it, right? It's totally transforming how people learn and how they use technology to support that. And we're not saying technology is the replacement. It's a supplement. It's a tool.
Yeah.
To provide a more holistic.
Well, what's the current technology in school?
Right. Well, that's moving. LMSs were what they were using, and now we're moving in past that. Right?
Schools don't even have that.
Exactly.
Like schools, I will say that growing up, you know, my kid being in California. What was unique was I could see my friends in Canada, mm-hmm. and I could go online, I could see my kids' marks on every assignment.
Mm-hmm.
And Canada, there's nothing like that,
right?
And I think in other states, there's nothing like that.
There's complete variability. There's no consistency.
All over the map,
right?
And I think what frustrated me about a lot of the learning was it wasn't really tailoring to what was important to her. Right?
100%.
And she didn't care. She was just like, she would get frustrated in certain subjects and love others,
mm-hmm.
which was the experience that we probably all have, as opposed to understanding, well, this is this type of learner and I need to present it in this way.
The format, they get it. That I was that type of situation to a T as a kid.
Yeah. Me too. Like, totally. I would like, well, what do I need to get in this?
Right.
To get to the next. It was like, that was my game.
How do I hack this?
How do I hack this?
Right.
It's like, well, this course, I think I'm going to get, you know, a really high mark in just because I like it. Right?
I 100% relate to that. 100% relate
to that.
But
I still got to take all this other junk.
Right.
You know, and I think I hit a point. But I'm sure there's kids. That's the way everybody is.
Right?
Like, so it's kind of interesting to me. We were talking, you're part of a program, which is Abundance 360.
Yeah.
And that's Peter Diamandis, who I mentioned that I've written about some of his ideas in my book, Automate and Grow. But he has a white paper in education, which I'm mm-hmm. sure you've read.
Oh, I've read it and commented on it and yes.
And the thing that's, so what I was interested in about it, or where I was thinking of applying it, was I work in hockey, and we, you know, I think that there's some challenges in public schools, and a sideway that's happened around that is hockey academies
mm-hmm.
and sports academies in general, right?
Yeah.
The benefit of that is if I'm attracting someone that is an athlete, but now I have to give them an education,
mm-hmm.
but that's an opportunity to me,
mm-hmm.
which is, well, why wouldn't you take this, you know, make this a charter school and let's be the first to take the Peter Diamandis framework.
Mm, right.
But you need something to deliver that.
Exactly.
Which could be Scrimmage.
That's exactly right. And the reality is there are a lot of people who have substantial capital who are thinking through alternative schooling models, right? Like, how do you leverage technology and the classroom? How do you, you know, take advantage of the world economy that we now live in and the fact that we can be connected to anyone in the world at any time, essentially, with our devices, right? And to do that, like, how do you, that's just what gets me super excited. Right?
That's exciting to me.
And that's why it even feels like, even now, this still feels like the beginning, so to speak, of what's possible or with where we're going.
Well, you've got a legacy.
Right? Yeah.
Again. And the legacy is public education. Mm-hmm. And public education, and this is me going on a rant, but
sure.
public education to me has always been about access, and what it's become is indoctrination. Mm-hmm. But there's no central reasoning behind it, mm-hmm. other than you're at this stage, I want you to go to college, mm-hmm. but then colleges are a mixed bag too, right?
Not only that, but you're literally getting people to go to school to obtain massive amounts of student debt.
Which is the other gross thing, which right. is like, I these kids can learn more from YouTube if directed.
Right, and guided.
Which they're not right now. Correct. But if they were, that's in the same format, which is what scrimmage is kind of about, right? Or is
it's a component
really,
of it. Yeah.
It's leveraging the same trend, which is, well, people clued in, I can go learn anything I want mm-hmm. on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, what if I want to do that in a structured format? There's a gap there.
Correct.
And school is the other extreme, which is, you have to hit these metrics, mm-hmm. and I'm just going to keep dumping more and more time and work on you.
100%.
And I'm not going to tailor any of it to you.
Yeah.
And then the extreme of that is that you're going to pay for this.
Yes.
And you run the risk of sending your kids somewhere where someone's, you know, third generation Frankfurt school.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, this is all corrupt. Like, no, you're corrupt. Let's just democratize this. How about I give you this iPad?
Right.
I love that idea.
Well, I mean, and that's back to Peter, right? The X Prize for Education, right? There's a challenge. I believe it's in Africa.
Oh, they have an X Prize for Education?
Uh-huh. And okay. The idea is they want to be able to teach them how to read, I think it's reading, proficiently within like 2 months. Or something like that using their device. Like essentially it teaches them, walks in. I might be in the dates
which
wrong,
is probably very possible.
But it's basically using the tool and guiding them through the process that they are proficient in reading for people that have never been to an educational system, right? They're literally being exposed kind of for the first time and then making them, helping them to read. So, I mean, that's the kind of stuff where, and that goes back to Peter again, like 3 billion new people having access to the internet, having access to a global economy, having access to participate in the knowledge economy, and to
right.
democratizing all these different things and giving access to educational knowledge, economic opportunities that only in theory elevates all of humanity's potential.
Exactly, yeah.
Right?
Because,
super exciting.
I mean, you are, public education is right about only one thing, which is that everybody needs education.
Correct.
The question is, why am I learning in these ways? And when politics and bureaucracy are deciding how you learn math, mm-hmm. but you're not learning, why is every kid not learning coding? Mm-hmm. Like, wouldn't that be a more logical way to learn math?
Yeah.
To me, and applicable, right? And maybe you'll get more engineers trickling out of it.
100%.
You know, why are we not emphasizing more creative things like art, writing, even video, like we have all these new media
100%.
Formats, which are way more important than some of the legacy stuff that you're trying to, you know, you're trying to get information
yeah.
into people when we have unlimited access to information.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, so I'm really excited about the idea of a scrimmage.
Yeah.
Because you need that platform mm-hmm. to make the other thing happen, I think.
Correct.
Because the only way that you're going to break it out is you have to provide not just the content, because it's not about content anymore. There's unlimited content.
Unlimited content.
It's like you need to understand, you need a platform like Scrimmage to make it all work. So
yes.
That's really exciting that you mentioned that. It's kind of,
yeah.
I know we kind of went off on a tangent.
No, it's a great tangent. Like, I mean, for me, that's one of the biggest motivators. I mean, that, and it goes back to, and it's even back to why I like healthcare, because I think that once you get past the basic survival needs of food, shelter, survive, right? Like the basic fundamental needs, education and healthcare are like the two levels that get to the next level of human development, right? Like those are the two transitional pieces
for
that
sure.
allow you to, you know, get to a greater level of consciousness, potential, self-actualization, realization, all those different things, right? So like, if you talk about moving up the pyramid of possibilities, right? Like, and there's still a substantial amount of the world's population that does not have the access to that. Like, we need to provide.
But they all have cell phones.
But that's it, exactly.
Look, and I love the example of banking, right? Where banking in African countries
yes.
and they're using like SMS to do their banking because there's no infrastructure.
Yes.
So that you can see where people will leapfrog in these countries
100%.
To the next thing, right?
They're fully mobile now. I mean, everyone in Africa has a ton of cell phones. I mean, that's the thing. And I have a friend of mine that they're literally building an organization for that exact, giving access to people to use technology and build stuff, literally become entrepreneurs in Africa and leverage this possibility to leapfrog what you're describing, right?
I love
like,
that.
There's
That's
no legacy infrastructure, there's no legacy thinking, there's no legacy any of that. It's all kind of a, not a blank canvas, but a chance to do something differently, do something more effectively, you know, than what we've done. And don't get me wrong, what we've done is has gotten us to a point. It's served the purpose.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
To open us up to the possibility of what else is possible.
Right? Yeah, because you're not, to your point, like you're not in starvation. You're in growth.
Right.
And that opens up possibilities, right?
Yeah. So,
yeah, I could go on and on about that. So I don't know how much more you want to talk about it.
But I'm good. Yeah.
I love the concept of scrimmage. And I can see what your vision is there, cool. Where you have possibilities, and I can think of so many cool ways to apply it. But mm-hmm. So maybe we can shift gears a little bit, because I know that you've been through the entrepreneurial journey, and now you're probably in a point where you're building teams. Mm-hmm. You're nurturing internal people to achieve bigger results, mm-hmm. and eyeing maybe your own, you know, next thing. Mm-hmm. What was that transition like for you, of going from like fighting it out on your own to having to get other people to fight your fight?
Well, so that's a good question. In the sense, so two things on that. So first off, I think it's still ongoing. I think it's always ongoing, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what leadership really is about. It's self-development is also, being in there, but also you have to teach and demonstrate, and also you learn a lot of lessons yourself in that process, right? So I think, you know, we talked about this earlier, is that, you know, one of the things I've seen with a lot of founder-led businesses is that the founder gets in the way. That was one of the blessings I had as I worked for different entrepreneurs. Some more successful than others, and what I found was that the more successful ones understood when the time was to get out of the way. And so I've always been extremely conscious of the idea that a business does not rely on one person. It relies, it takes a visionary, it takes that leadership to get out there and do it, but ultimately long-term success, long-term impact, long-term maturation of a company is based on everyone stepping into greater levels of their potential and leadership capabilities and management and business skills and all that, right? And so I've actively cultivated that, you know, expectation of the people in our team that there's a future, that there's opportunity, that there's what they want to do in their career. Scrimmage is a place where they can do that. I mean, our mission statement is to inspire career growth, right? Both for our one, that's one part of our mission statement, is to inspire career growth both for our customers and for our team, right? Because it's that goes back to the concept of you have great customer service because you have a super engaged, really active, dynamic team.
So right? You were very conscious about making 100%. Sure that you communicated that to people.
Core values from day one. Yeah.
Who was your first hire?
So our first hire.
You don't have to name them if you don't want, but.
Yeah, no. So our first hire was basically in client success, right? So essentially in this kind of like, you know, once you land a customer, then it's about
onboarding
and supporting that customer and making sure that there's someone available to, you know, take them through that experience, right? And so, and then, two things, because there's also the technology side. So that's
development.
I think that's a preconceived notion, right? So like, you have to have a product,
right?
And then you have to, you know, there's kind of coexistence, right? There's a product, there's someone who has to sell that product, and then you have to execute on that product. And then that's generally how I look at the entire business, is that there's a production of sales and marketing, there's the, you know, product side, and which is, you know, truly engineers and product strategy and vision, and then there's you know, servicing and supporting clients, right? Those are generally speaking the three major buckets.
Makes total sense.
The entire business, and that's where I've said maybe on that podcast you saw, I was like, all about keeping it simple, right? No matter how many roles, like, you know, you have support people, and you've got marketing coordinators, and you've got, you know, this particular account manager, and this particular account manager, and you've got this executive and that executive, right? At the end of the day, everyone's job is about delivering a quality product to a customer that has been sold, right? Those are the three facets of a successful business.
For sure, yeah.
And like, I encourage people to think that way in our company, because that's how you stay and grow and keep it simple. And processes will organize. And again, if you invite and hire talented people to join the vision and mission of an enterprise, they will solve those problems naturally, because they understand that part of the business.
Is that person still with you today, or?
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's exciting. Yeah. That's interesting. And what was the thought process when you hired them? Because I think it's always interesting to understand what was the conversation in your head when you were thinking, "I gotta get this." When you're thinking, "This is the first person I gotta bring in," and was it an event with the customer, or was it just something that you knew you had to take a deep dive on and take a chance on?
Well, I think it's more. Again, back to being proactive, like it just, there's an instinct of knowing when the timing of...
And trusting that.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I think a lot of people struggle with that first hire. And then once they get that out of the way, it's like, then they're ready for growth, right?
Right.
So you see people that don't get beyond that, where they don't build those four pillars, right? And the pillars are always, I totally agree with you because I write about this, which is create a digital product, right, that solves a problem, automate marketing, sales, and support.
Right.
Because that's kind of, you have other stuff going on, but those are the pillars,
sure.
right? And that's kind of what you were talking about. So it was interesting that you hired customer success, because I think you were taking on the sales function and you had a technical co-founder. Was there a pretty good division there? Like, did you ever wade into product or more just for...
I mean, yeah, as the company has matured, I mean, absolutely. So I would say that that goes back to being, I mean, a lot of what we built early on was in response to customer
feedback.
Feedback, right? And so in that regard, yeah, we built... And some of that was part of how we were able to weather through some of the growth problem challenge, right? So we built a subscription model, but we also have services on top of that. And that balance of developing software and that we could then license helped to build the company, right? So
when you first started it, like, how did you decide to productize it? Was that something that you took on or did you bring someone in to do
it? Yeah, so that was part of the opportunity. So we basically, the best way to describe it was we had a couple of these clients that were using it as a product, and we said there's a subscription model to doing this that allows for technically a reduced fee to the client. Say you can pay a subscription fee of X that is ongoing, and that is a shared value there because you're getting it at an affordable price point. And then we're able to then use that product and build around that product to offer it at a higher value to a larger customer base. And the idea of, again, of SaaS is everyone benefits from that product innovation and growth. Right, and so that's high level how it became, you know, a product. And recognition was, okay, the more, and this goes back to bootstrapping, the more that we can drive a recurring model, the more that allows the company to scale because it gives greater visibility into longer term forecasts, which goes back to, you know, you need to make product investments sooner than you see the return. So the more visibility we had into recurring revenue, the more palpable it made the investment. Right, so like we said, okay, we know we can make.
There was a future. You could see it was like, I'm going to get the payoff here. I just have to hold on to the customer.
We saw the break even at the minimum to say, okay, as long as we do this,
we're good.
Yeah, and that helped to mitigate the risk. There's always risk, but it helped mitigate it, and then it was incentive to go sell more. Right,
I don't want to take your whole life away, but a couple topics. One was, where do you see sales in general now? Because there's obviously the growth of digital, right? Like electronic commerce and more research being done on the internet, but you still have direct teams, right? And I think there's the struggle right now with what's the future. And then marketing is trying to, you know, take on more sales function in a lot of businesses. So what do you see is the current state of it? And does it depend maybe on the product and the market?
I think it does depend on the product and the market. That's really, and I think about this a lot actually, because, you know, e-commerce has changed and will continue to change how people buy products. I mean, like just Amazon.
And SaaS, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, just that has totally changed the game for how people buy. It's also changed the model for how people research their decisions to buy. And I do think that marketing plays a larger role, and specificity with the marketing plays a larger role than salespeople. I think there's also value. I mean, like, at the end of the day, sales has to happen, in my opinion, sales has to happen early in companies. Like, you have to convince someone to buy a product. And I feel like in my experience, the ability of a person to connect with another person to help them understand each other. What do you want to accomplish? How can I help you accomplish that?
It's that relationship still matters.
100%. And I do think that has been not a secret ingredient, but a key ingredient to what's allowed Scrimmage to be successful, is that it does not feel like every other venture-backed, you know, transactional customer.
Don't look behind the wizard.
Yes.
Don't behind the curtain to see the wizard. It's like, buy on my website and...
Correct. And I do think that the other thing is that, back to the concept commentary on sales, I think there will be two things. One is that because we've gotten so good at digital marketing, and because it's gotten crazy levels of, you know, we talked about how you can market through different channels and specificity around targeting, and like there's so much legwork that can be done now, but you're also becoming inundated by all this automation, which you talk about all the time.
For sure.
That you literally feel like you're getting bombarded by advertising.
Yeah.
And we're just, it's going to get even more so once we start seeing you know, literally like little images popping up in in our field as we're walking around halls and stuff like that. Like that glass could pop an advertisement up, right? But like,
hey, what movie did I just see with that in it?
It's gonna happen.
Remember,
it's gonna, with 5G, it's gonna happen. But that only brings back the point, which is, people want that trust. They want to trust the company. And that's even one thing back to Salesforce that I appreciate about Mark Benioff, where he talks about the lack of trust, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something in business where I feel like it comes back to the human connection, to be able to pick up the phone and talk to someone. And it goes back to, even in the sales cycle, I think I even talked about this on that show, is that like enterprise salespeople have like 20% of the sale to actually really influence or make any type of real change on the buying, because they're doing so much now online and vetting and RFPs and digitization.
So it's like they're doing all this research before they get to you, if they have the bandwidth.
Yeah.
And it's like when you have that FaceTime, it's like risky that you get it back, or
it's all about, I mean, like that's
it's the trust factor.
And it's the make or break in some ways of working with a company, right? Because if you're able to maximize that, that's the differentiation factor. Like everyone can do digital marketing, everyone can build decent products. Not everyone can be in integrity and deliver consistently on what they say they're going to do, right?
So do you think people are buying into Scrimmage because of you? Because of the people, the culture, the tech? Like what's the
all
big...
All the above. It's not because of me, definitely not. Yeah. It's because of the team, right? The culture that we've built collectively of having a team that's focused on customer service and building excellent products, right? And so the combination of those two things and doing it consistently year after year after year builds credibility, right?
That makes sense.
And I think that, and it goes back to, like I said, we've cut most of our clients that were with us in the early days, they're still working with us.
Oh, that's great.
Right? And so like that speaks to the journey.
For sure.
And it just adds to that. Like, I literally was met with a client before we had this meeting, you and I, and she was telling me that she talked to her friends who all talk about how much they hate their LMS. And she literally, and she told me that she tells everyone, like, we love our technology platform. It's amazing. And like, they're like, what are you using? Who is it? Like, and that's really,
you're now at that point exciting. Where they're just talking about Scrimmage in those terms, where they're being advocates for you and the product.
Correct.
That's awesome. I mean,
that's
probably very rewarding at this point.
Absolutely. And I think the team as well sees that. Like, we talked about, you know, tech education. I mean, education broadly is a $1 trillion industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Corporate education alone is a multi-billion dollar industry, right? So like, when your people see that level of impact they can have on, not financials, but just impact on people's lives, like their jobs, their futures, their kids.
For sure, you know, it's everything.
How people create things, like, it's an incredibly exciting place to be working in terms of the segment, and then working for a company that actually, you know,
is a leading,
strives to implement what they're advocating, right? Like that's
so that's people buying into your why as a company.
Yes.
And then spreading that as well. So your culture that you've established has obviously been principal to your success, it sounds like, with customers. So that, to your point, it's not like a failure point of one where they're just buying into you. It's like everyone's singing from the same
100%.
Future. I love that. That's great. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about that we haven't touched on? Like,
no, this has been really fun. The only thing I'll say is I got my little hockey puck here.
Yeah, tell me about this.
So we have our fun name, Scrimmage, and it's the idea of games, right?
Right.
Practice games.
Yep.
We've been doing for the last couple of years these intermittent challenges where we leverage, you know, a hockey puck, or if it's our Scrimmage face-off for the new year. Last year we did the Scrimmage kickoff. Which is cool because we had Philadelphia and Minneapolis competing in the playoffs, right?
That's
so that
great.
Was fun. So we had the football. And we've done frisbees and volleyballs, and we did baseball and during the World Series and different stuff. And the point is that, like, when you go on social media and you follow us and you engage with us, A, you can get these cool sports.
Get a nice
things.
Little puck.
But then you also, but then you take pictures with it, you consume content, you share content, you participate in the broader Scrimmage customer community or prospective educational customer community, and there's just fun and value being exchanged.
So you're getting that engagement.
100%.
There's
and it's just about building, that's the other key part, just building fun into the workplace, right?
Okay, like, so how does someone get a puck?
Go online, go on our website, right? And there's a piece in there around the Scrimmage kickoff, our Scrimmage face-off campaign. Put your email and phone number in there and your email address, and we'll send it to you.
I love it. That's cool.
So,
okay, so I'm gonna wrap up with two questions. One is, and I think
the guys are pretty
fun
too.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, very good. Yeah. So anyway, go ahead.
Other than the
podcast. Other than the we've done like cool like drones and conferences.
Oh, okay,
and,
wait, this is legit. Wait, I'm
this missing, legit. Oh yeah, okay, yeah.
I'm missing something.
Though. No, that's why I'm gonna.
I don't want to over.
This
I don't want
to. I'm gonna give this. To
oh,
you.
Thank you.
You can keep that. But no,
Derek knows that I love pucks because
exactly
it's like half my life.
Yeah, but in all seriousness, that's when you go on and you want Instagram to take pictures and you share content about learning on Twitter and you interact and we track all of that, right? We see who's engaging and then there's leaderboards like we talk about and points and then you know people will win. Really cool things.
Oh,
cool
great. Prizes. Okay. So. All right. I didn't want to sell it short. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm glad we went back to that.
Yeah.
Actually, one other thing, which is, you know, you're part of another group. Like, tell me about, like, you seem to invest a lot in your own development and in kind of like these mastermind type groups. Like, what's been really impactful for you? And I don't know if there's any one specific one that you want to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, so I've always been a part of entrepreneurial groups. I shy away from the term masterminds because that
I guess there's a connotation.
Yeah, there is. But in particular, entrepreneurship groups,
okay,
are people that are really applying themselves and having success, right? Because I want to learn from people who are, frankly, doing significantly better than me.
That makes sense.
Building bigger companies, have longer track records, they're doing more innovative, they're doing, you know, going to the moon, right? They're changing healthcare.
Yeah.
Like they're
right.
I want to hang around people that are doing those things. And so this is the Arte Syndicate, which is a group that I'm here that's all about this idea of an entrepreneurial movement. Like how do you, and this is back to Nadine, the idea that entrepreneurs and dreamers are the people that
that's who's gonna change the world. For sure.
Yes, the politicians, the bureaucrats, they're not the ones that's going to do it.
Yeah, they're the legacy.
The people who are looking to hack and create a better way and have the resources and collective power and creativity to do it, that's what's going to do it, right? So that's what this represents, and as well as with Abundant and other groups that I've been a part of or still a part of, and I help and support, like, that's a big part for me. But yeah, it's two things. One, it's about personal growth and development. Two, it's about giving a greater level of resourcefulness to my team. And to my partners to be able to help them grow and seek their own opportunities and potential, right? And then three is because all of that leads to changing the world. I mean, that sounds crazy.
Well, no, it's
but
true.
Like, that's how my brain works.
Here, like you're working on things that I think are really important, which is entrepreneurial education is huge and doesn't happen except in the shadows.
Yeah.
Like that's almost what's happening, right? It's like it's not mainstream.
Right.
Which is ridiculous because we should be training a nation of entrepreneurs.
100%.
Like you have the ultimate system where, hey, if they're, you know, not only should this not be trashed, this you're in the right system, you're just not getting the right education.
Mm-hmm.
So I love hearing that where you can see that people that are entrepreneurs are trying to invest in their own education.
Yeah.
And there's this weird branding thing around validity, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know what I'm saying there, which is like, you know, if I go to a university, I'm getting a brand,
right?
I'm co-opting someone else's brand
mm-hmm.
to validate me. I have no idea why that takes 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's no science or logic behind it, right?
No.
And
well, it goes back to, originally it was access, right? So keep in mind, back in the 1920s, going to university was, you know,
exclusive.
It was exclusive, right? That was, you know, that's what the best, most well-educated and people that were changing the game, so to speak, around the world at the time were all well-educated by those schools. And so there was a desire to, and again, entrepreneurs started it, said we need to be able to create a way to provide greater numbers of people access to education. And I do think the intent was good. And then I also think that, you know, it's evolved and morphed into something that maybe not, maybe it was intended, but not intended, I don't know. But I think there's now people that are saying there's alternatives and other ways to accomplish this in this new economic and technological society.
Well, I think the more that people agree that is not only valid, but the way to go, you know, we're all going to win, right?
Yeah.
So I love seeing stuff like this where maybe it doesn't have a brand that people associate with that and go, yeah, everybody wants in there.
Yeah.
But the more of these programs that are legit and are having results, I'm excited by that. So
that's
really, it's amazing to see people that have invested in it and then, you know, get the return in the sense that they're doing something cool and unique. So
awesome. This has been a really fun interview. Is there anything else you want to cover?
So I'm going to wrap with two questions,
sure.
Which I think we've already answered the one, which is, how are you, Derek, changing the world?
Well, so I my mission statement in life, if you want to call it that, right, that I developed through hanging out with Peter, right, or in that group, was about how can I use my talents to change that. So what I have a good gift at is connecting people with great ideas, entrepreneurs, with people that can help implement on those ideas and capital, right? For the purposes of elevating education and healthcare worldwide so that people can thrive at a greater level, right? So that means that the companies that I lead, the companies I support, the companies that I invest in, they all have some aspect to those things, right? Because they're important to me. And that, do I think that they are the fundamental elements that will allow, once we got past basic survival, things will allow a greater number of human beings to contribute at a much higher level and ultimately raise the standards and possibilities.
Raise all boats.
Yes.
I love it.
Yeah.
That is, I mean, that's a huge thing, but I think you have a platform where you have the leverage to potentially do that.
Yeah. Right?
So that's really exciting. I will wrap with one final thing, which is when we have interesting guests on the podcast, we always ask them to nominate other interesting guests.
Yeah.
So, you know, we talk to entrepreneurs and experts.
Yeah.
And I would like to know who you would like to nominate for an episode of the Automate and Grow podcast.
So I would say there's two people. So
okay.
One is Naveen Jain, who we've talked about.
Naveen.
And he's a great guy. And we already mentioned him in this conversation.
Yes.
He's an amazing guy and brilliant mind. And I think that he's definitely someone who's worth talking to. And the other one that I would say is a good person to talk to is Joe DeSena.
From Spartan
Race.
Right.
A lot of fun. And he's also done an amazing job of building out and automating that brand and building a 5 million
that
plus
is amazing.
Person community. So he's also actively looking for fun people to talk with as well. I know that. So
okay, so Naveen, I've nominated you before, and we got Dr. Stephen Barry on the podcast as a result, which we really appreciate. But Naveen, you've actually been nominated by someone else now, which is Derek, to be on an episode. And then Joe would be an amazing guest. That's incredible. So if you can make those introductions or connections, I would love that. Thank you so much. I really appreciate connecting with you. This has been another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. We will see you on the next episode of Automate and Grow.
This has been an episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. Check out other episodes for interesting topics on how to grow, innovate, and automate your business.